Hi, I'm Jay, host of Jay's Place, and I want to invite you, cable listeners, to the Board of Directors meeting, Saturday, March 25th at 10 a.m.
Attend the KBOO Board of Directors meeting this Saturday, March 25th at 10 a.m. Please note the location of this month's board meeting has been changed to Sisters of the Road to accommodate our Spring Pledge Drive. That's the KBOO Board of Directors meeting March 25th at 10 a.m. at Sisters of the Road, 133 Northwest 6th Avenue, downtown Portland.
This is DJ Audio, and I want to invite you to support your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Be active, be informed, and be there.
I've been waiting for something to happen. For a week or a month or a year, with the blood and the ink of the headline and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men and the gun to the wars that are fought in places where their business interests run. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments are killing their own. Or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun, or a brick, or a stone, and there are lies in the balance.
What happened to our music? Huh, that's very interesting. Okay, well, the music is gone and we're here. Good morning and welcome to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Melody Silverwolf, and it's a beautiful Friday spring morning outside, folks. And welcome to our show. It's going to be a very special one this morning. We have some really amazing guests, and it's membership drive. It's that time of year again when, you know, spring is springing and the flowers are blooming, and it brings to mind thoughts of growing our family, just like people's minds turn to thoughts of, you know, romance and things like that in the spring. KBOO's mind turns to thoughts of, hey, let's invite more people to join the party. And so that's what we're going to be doing today, along with interviewing our fabulous guests. Thorne Anderson and Cale Aylford are going to be our guests later, and they are two of the photojournalists that created the wonderful book Unembedded. So they'll be coming up soon. In the meantime, we'll be chatting with you briefly before that. My lovely co-host, Ani Haynes, will be joining us in just a moment. And so, you know, before we get started with the interview, I think it's really kind of disturbing to me that song that we just played, which, of course, was Lives in the Balance by Jackson Browne, came out, I think about maybe 20, 25 years ago, back in the 80s. It was a long time ago. It was off of one of his earlier albums, and he wrote that during the time when our government was heavily involved down in Central America. And it's sad to me that nothing has changed since that time. Just rather like this song by John Trudell called Bombs Over Baghdad, which is an old song, and yet nothing's changed there either. You know, and I realized just this morning that for some people, that's all they've ever known. You know, when I was a young child, I was born in the mid-50s, and, you know, before the Vietnam era, and just after I was born, actually, I think the year that we pulled out of Korea. So when I was a child, we weren't engaged in any, you know, police actions, a nice euphemism, huh, or wars of any kind. And then, of course, I came of age during the Vietnam era, and then we pulled out of Vietnam, and that we were done with that. And, you know, for those of you who are younger, that's all that you've ever experienced ever since you were born, is our country engaging in military action unjustly around the globe, persecuting people that we have no business persecuting, and, you know, using our troops to further the interests of big business and the rich. And it's just sickening, and it just never seems to end. That's, you know, one of the things that KBOO is all about, of course, is working to end things like that, and that's one of the reasons that we played that song this morning. And it just really seems so telling to me that it still applies after all these years. And, of course, you know, no end in sight. We heard from the White House the other day that they expect to be in Iraq until, 2009 or so. I sincerely hope not, because one shudders to think how many people by that time will have died in that war. And, you know, already we're up to several thousand of our troops alone, not to mention, about 15 or 20,000 of our troops that have been seriously damaged, not to mention the rest of the so-called coalition. I know other nation soldiers have died as well. And, of course, there are unknown, untold, uncountable numbers of Iraqi civilians who have died since we went to Iraq in the first place back in the early 90s under the so-called sanctions, which basically didn't do anything to end the standoff with Iraq. All it did was cause a lot of innocent people, mostly small children, to suffer and die. And, you know, in the past, we've talked with Dan Handelman, who's been to Iraq with Voices in the Wilderness, and he had some really sobering stories to tell us about what life is like there. So I'm really looking forward to interviewing these two photojournalists this morning, because they did spend a considerable amount of time in Iraq, unembedded, as the book name implies, and took some really amazing photos that, of course, you know, we'd ever see things like this. The rest of the developed nations in the world, via their news media, see a lot of graphic footage from Iraq every day of what's really going on there. They see the people lying dead in the streets. They see the devastation that's been caused by bombing, etc. But, you know, we don't see that here because, you know, the media is sanitized for our protection, and, of course, not really for our protection, for the protection of those who against whom we would direct our ire if only we as a nation were fully informed and aware about what it is that is really going on in our name in Iraq. And, you know, I don't know. I just think that, to me, I can't understand how any thinking person can support what we're doing there. It's not containing an enemy. I can't imagine that anyone could seriously argue that the Iraqi people are a threat to us, and in terms of a military threat to us. And you know, we're losing far too many soldiers there, and the rest of the people who are continuing to serve there are being sent back again and again. In the meantime, their personal lives and family lives back here at home are falling apart. They've lost their jobs. A lot of them have lost their spouses. They never see their children. Their parents are passing away, and they're thousands of miles away and can't go to their funerals. Their whole lives are falling apart. The Iraqi people's lives are being inexorably destroyed. Their environment is being destroyed. And even if we were to leave today, if we were just to say, okay, we've had enough, we're pulling out of Iraq, we're going home, this was a bad idea, and sorry about that, we're leaving. I mean, even if that was to happen, it would take, I'd say, generations for Iraq to recover in a meaningful way. We've totally destroyed their infrastructure. They have few roads. A lot of the homes there have been destroyed. Most cities only have electricity for a couple of hours a day. A lot of people, something like 55% of Iraq doesn't have potable drinking water. And, then, of course, there's the lasting effects of the depleted uranium that we're using in the weapons there, which they will also have to cope with. So, you know, I'm just amazed at the amount of destruction that we have managed to achieve there and the lasting nature of it. And that's the legacy that we'll be leaving with the Iraqi people. And by extension, with the rest of Muslim people in the Middle East, that's what they're going to think of America for generations to come, and that's what our kids and grandkids will be dealing with as the legacy of this era. Sobering things to think about so early in the morning. I know it's not pleasant to listen to or think about, but you know that's the way it is. And you know, the more that we shirk away from thinking about it, the longer we prolong the pain of, you know, when you eventually rip off the Band-Aid, the longer you wait and worry about it, the worse it gets. Yeah, we're hearing little shouts in the hallway here. And so as we go forth with this show this morning, I encourage you to think about, you know, what our legacy will be. And, you know, every day that legacy becomes more firmly established. And not only that, of course, but our treasury becomes more depleted. You know, our grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to be paying this debt for a long time to come, because that's the way that the Bush crime family has set things up. You know, raid the treasury now and leave the consequences to some other administration down the road, preferably one that's run by the Democrats so they can blame them. So, you know, all those things and more are, you know, sort of flying around out there in the cosmos this morning. As, you know, as we are going about our lives here in America, all that's going on in Iraq in our names. And food for thought. And, you know, I'm sorry to be, bringing up these depressing subjects, but they must be thought about and considered. Because, you know, the more that we are in denial about them, you know, the more that we'll have to deal with them later. I'm really excited this morning because it is membership drive, and you know, we're going to have some special guests with us from back in the bowels of the back room, along with our guests on the phone. I really love membership drive. I know a lot of people are, you know, they're like, oh, membership drive, they're going to talk to me again and ask me for money, and I don't want to hear it. Yeah, I love it. I look forward to it every year. Twice a year we do this, and I enjoy it because, first of all, where else do you know that twice a year they throw a three-week-long party that goes on most of the day and night, and anytime you drop in, there's people there, there's food, there's beverages, there's a party atmosphere, and people are having a good time. And, of course, they also like it because it gives us a good reason to remind ourselves why we're members of the KABU family and why we would like other people to become members of that family, too. And I don't know, I just really think it's fun. We get to have exciting people as guests on our show. who are the folks who'd like to help us share with you the KBOO way and urge you to join us. I don't know. I just really I have a good time with it every year. And I look forward to it, and I'm glad it's here. It's like that, as the song says, it's my favorite time of the year, and I'm glad that it's here. So, I'm getting, people are making strange gestures at me. Oh, no, now it's the duck. Quack, quack, quack. Am I supposed to quack like a duck now? Is that it? One of the great things about being on the air here is you have to interpret your engineer's semaphoric gestures, you know, and sometimes people get very creative. Oh, I see. I don't know what that one means, but I don't even want to try to imitate it. Now I was getting all kinds of strange things going on in there. Yes, our engineers get ever more creative in trying to communicate with us. I can hardly wait to see what will come next.
I've invented three new hand signals just this morning.
Are they something that you, well, I guess you can't see them on the air.
No,
so you can share
it won't
them.
Matter. You know, thank you so much for, well, you know, feeding for me.
Covering for you, yes. Blabbing on and on, well, yes, while we're getting these things worked out.
I've been setting up some last-minute substitution, throwing ins, and good morning, Teresa and Daniel.
Good morning. The number to call is 503-232-8818 to support KBOO and be positively revolting. And I feel positively revolting this morning, don't you, Daniel?
You're all in pink. Which some people could find positively revolting. But I know you better than that. You're very revolting. You've been revolting since the day you walked into KBOO.
It's all in the context. And context is what you get on KBOO radio, probably why you listen. So now's the time to call. We've got the phone set up, and the answer is waiting for you to pledge and to join the KBOO effort, the KBOO phenomenon.
The KBOO revolt.
The KBOO revolt. It's very positive.
Yes.
At 503-232-8818.
Yes, if you're outside Portland, it's 1-877-500-KBOO. And it is the revolt. We want you to join the revolt. It's a revolt against corporate media. It's a revolt against obscuring information from you who have a right to know. Teresa Mitchell hosts a program called Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. She's a hero. She's a hero of mine. Ever since I first came to KBOO, I was surrounded by local heroes. And if you are a listener of KBOO, I think you know what I'm talking about. Ani and Melody, they're heroes. They host a talk radio show, the likes of which you have never heard on any other radio station.
And here's a sign of different people. This is one of the sound makers.
What is that person's Rabia, name anyway?
One of the persons who is engineering brought in last night because she was pitching for the noise show. So she decided to make some noises herself. So she and
what is the name of this person here?
The name of this person?
Rabia is going to come and tell us.
Oh, I don't know. It looks very happy. She's, and
Squeaky. Of course. Oh, that I remember this. Didn't you used to be in the Manson family? Yeah, okay. We'd like to thank the K&F Coffee House because they're one of those great businesses that helps the drive by feeding and coffeeing us here, the volunteers here at KBOO. They like to align themselves with the KBOO audience. There are many great progressive businesses in Portland that know who their audience is, know who their clientele is. So thanks to K&F Coffee House, 26 in Clinton, and also, hey, Alexis. Alexis at 215 West Burnside, did you know that tomorrow is Greek Independence Day?
Yay!
I did not know that.
That's a great Leftadia. Leftadia. It's a great time to go to Alexis. It'll be tomorrow night.
We're jumping down a little bit, but this program is going to be, at least in part, about a book called Unembedded, and it is, let's see, how shall I describe this book? It is a book of photographs from Iraq, and it, better than any paragraph you could read, tells you that what you've heard about Iraq in the media and the corporate-owned media is a lie. It's just a lie. It's not the sort of book that you look at lightly. I don't mean to tell you that it's gore and blood and stuff like that. No, it's more poetic than that, I guess you'd say. But there are photographs in this book that will stay in your mind forever. And we have it, and you need to have it yourself because you need to show it to your friends and anyone who thinks that the war is okay. It's called Unembedded, and we will give it to you for a $75 minimum pledge right now at 503-232-8818. And the more you hear about this, the more you're going to want it. So get in early and get one of the copies that we don't have to back order.
You know, and you can make that $75 sounds like a lot of money, but you know, I am on unemployment, and I recently upped my pledge to $10 a month. $10 a month slides out of my bank account. I never see it. And I think KABU, to me, is worth $10 every month.
I would say so. And yes. A number to call to give that $10
what a month. What is that number?
It's 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Lisa from Oregon City has called. She might have dialed that 877-500-5266.
Not from Oregon City. She didn't, unless she was at a payphone.
I don't know. I live in a little southeast bubble.
Hey, I never thought about that. You could call without putting quarters into the payphone.
Yeah, you can. You can call the toll-free number.
Well, we like that. And also Terry from Lake Oswego. We just wanted to thank those two for making
you.
That call.
That's awesome.
Helping us towards our goal.
Yes, which is a sizable one, and we're really counting on you to help us out.
We call that $1,500
yes,
we need
indeed.
To raise before 9 o'clock this morning. So thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you.
Take it away.
My monthly contribution crawls out of my bank account. I don't know. Daniel slides. Mine crawls. Everybody has their own way of giving.
Okay. Well, however it works for you. And I really do want to refocus now back from the ether to the book that Teresa was just talking about. We are very fortunate today to be joined by phone with two of the photojournalists who participated in the making of this book, Unembedded. And we have with us by phone Thorne Anderson and Kale Alford. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so glad that you're there. This book is really powerful. I'm just going to sort of cut to the chase. When I first saw it, it is, I think, to me, I've been following the war, you know, since well before we started the shock and awe treatment as we were just in the, Gulf One, the sanctions, the no-fly zone bombings. And I really felt like I was informed about the war. And yet, when this book came into my hands, it hit me at a new visceral level where my information suddenly had a face. And my information suddenly had context.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I guess I just want to start out by thanking both of you for the incredibly dangerous and courageous work that you do.
Yes, indeed.
And following that, I would, I guess, like to know what drew you to work as photojournalists in Iraq, arguably either the most or second most dangerous place in the world for a photojournalist to work.
Well, I first went to Iraq in October of 2002, which was before the U.S. invasion, and I went to do a story about the effect of the sanctions, which were under the auspices of the United Nations, but largely driven by the United States with the aiding and abetting of Great Britain primarily. So I went there in October of 2002 and spent a couple of months, 6 weeks, I think, before, and found a story in Iraq that I found really shocking. I'm a journalist. I'm an obsessive news reader, and I also felt well informed about what was going on in Iraq at the time. But I was really shocked at how little I knew about what the sanctions were doing to Iraq, and that's what made me think from the beginning that I really needed to stay there and follow this story as much as possible, because I didn't feel like we in the United States really understood enough about what was happening in Iraq.
Well, and of course that's because we are systematically deprived of seeing images like the ones in your book, which are incredibly powerful and moving. And of course, you know, we know from past experience that there were some key images from the Vietnam era that persuaded people that it was time to end the war, most notably the famous image of the young girl running naked down the road after being napalmed. And I think there's good reasons why the powers that be here in America have labored long and hard to keep Americans from seeing some images such as the ones in your book. And these pictures that are in your book are just, they're just so, there's just no describing how moving and visceral they are. And as Ani said, they put a face to, you know, the nice, neat little things we read in the paper. Oh, yes, and, you know, this bombing happened and that. And, you know, you read it and you feel, you feel terrible, but there's no comparison to seeing an image. The cliche that a picture is worth a thousand words has never been so true. And I wonder, how do you manage to keep up, keep heart for the work you're doing day after day? I mean, doesn't it just rip you apart to do this?
Well, I'll answer that. I think, you know, as sort of wrenching as those photographs are and may seem in the book or may be in the book, it's nothing compared to
I can imagine
to what it is to see those things firsthand, and that's endlessly frustrating, I think, for us as journalists to try to communicate to people who haven't had firsthand experience with war just how horrifying and life-altering those sorts of things are, not only for the people who are injured or the soldiers involved, but everyone who lives in that society. I think it's fair to say in Iraq now, everyone has been affected now by the violence there and, you know, by this war that we essentially started. So, I mean, it really, for me, this project was a labor of love and came out of frustration for, you know, my sense that Americans were not connecting very well with what was happening on the ground in Iraq. And I can say that, yeah, it affects all of us. I mean, anyone who spent some time there, any of our colleagues who spent time on the ground in Iraq, you know, it's sort of, I think we share a similar kind of despair over the things that we've seen there. And that's what we are trying to communicate.
Right. And I think every American owes you and every other journalist, you know, no matter how embedded they might have been, who's been there and, you know, at least attempted to bring the story to us, a debt of gratitude, because I just think that this is so overwhelming. I can't imagine having to deal with it every day.
Well, there are also, you know, many wonderful things about that country, too, which is why it makes it possible, I think, for us to work and to continue to care about it. And so
that comes across in the photos very clearly. That's the most amazing thing about this book, is that the people's heart really comes through.
They are wonderful people. I've had so many positive experiences there, just as many positive as negative ones.
And I guess to that end, there's in the introduction, I'm going to go ahead and read a couple of paragraphs that sort of close out the introduction. The introduction is written by Philip Robertson, and he says, "We crossed the lines because we believed it's more important to humanize a conflict than it is to trade in rhetorical truths or to reinforce easy notions of enemy and friend, which are mere propaganda. Instead, we wanted to document honestly what we witnessed in the war, because this is the sole duty of journalists, regardless of their nationality and religion. We were able to do this precisely because we did not carry weapons or claim allegiance to one of the warring parties. If our journeys behind the lines were acts of faith, then they were also proof that often when one man is confronted with the humanity of another, he will not raise his rifle and pull the trigger. This is not disloyalty to one's country. It is a thing that brings an end to war. Now here are your witnesses." And to me, that really does sum up, and I was wondering if either of you would like to comment on that sort of sentiment on being a photojournalist and acting as witness.
Well, yes. I mean, as this book has gone out, and we also have two traveling photo exhibits that are reaching a wider and wider audience, we're reaching a lot of people who are well informed about Iraq, also a lot of people who are not so well informed about Iraq, people who understand journalism and people who don't. And we get some pretty shocking responses sometimes, hate mail even. Some criticism that perhaps the fact that we have worked in Iraq independently, not with the support of the American or coalition military, somehow means that we're showing some disloyalty to our country. Kale and I are both Americans, and for us that's kind of shocking, because we felt all along that we were doing what journalists should be doing. We should be getting as much of the story from as broad a perspective as possible. And we felt that we were filling a hole where we perceived that a hole in the cupboards existed. And for us, at least, that feels like a service to our country and not as some act of treason. And so it's shocking for me to have some people respond to it that way.
That's really sorry. Sorry. That's really telling, I think. I'm very sorry to hear that, but I'm not surprised, because I think that shows the sad state that that we're in this country, where it comes to our expectations of journalists and media. We've come to accept as the norm the sort of faux news brand of journalism, and you know, so few people in America now remember and lament the loss of, you know, the Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite era of journalism, where you could turn on the news and count on getting at least a reasonable facsimile of what was really going on in the world every night at 6 p.m., and that just isn't the case anymore.
And I certainly don't want to say that our book is everything there is to know about Iraq. I mean, we are one piece of an information web, an important piece, I think. But I think people should understand that all of these pieces are important, that you do need to know what the White House is saying. You need to know what the Pentagon is saying.
Yeah.
That's important for us to understand at least what they're saying publicly. We also need to know what the American troops are doing and what their lives are like. That's also important. But it's also very, very important to know what Iraqis themselves are experiencing. And even the insurgents, even those people who are fighting against the Americans, it's valuable information to know what their lives look like, what motivates them, what it looks like when they come into conflict with the Americans, and what sort of repercussions that might produce, both for Iraq and, by extension, for the United States in the long term.
Yes, I totally agree. Well, I just need to take a moment and remind everyone that it's 8:05 in the morning, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. We're interviewing two amazing photojournalists this morning who are working in Iraq, and they've written a book, and it's filled with their photos called Unembedded, for independent photojournalists on the war in Iraq. And it's a really amazing book, and I think it shows a real dedication to the true principles of journalism, which is far too rare these days. I'm very impressed that y'all are willing to put yourselves on the line to such a degree to bring us, you know, this work, which is really, it's very necessary. I'm a little curious about your traveling exhibit. Where is that going to, what cities will that be visiting? Do you know exactly?
Well, we're on the road right now with the show. We're taking it to Flagstaff, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
It's open at the moment in New York City, near South Street Seaport, at a gallery called Photographic at 252 Front Street. That's been the opening of the show on the anniversary, the third anniversary of the war. And the show will also be in Yale, at Yale University in September, October. And on our website, unembedded.net, we have the schedule of the exhibit posted, and also information about how to bring the exhibit to your town, if that's something you're interested in. And we hope to be organizing sort of community discussions, town hall meetings, and panels around the exhibit to get this the dialogue that we're having, like the dialogue we're having now, to get this dialogue out into the public sphere in our communities.
That would be great.
I want to here's what I want to do.
Let's start over.
Sorry, brain, two different directions. Oops. I would love to talk to you, Cale. Some of the photographs that you've taken, especially of one of them that I found particularly intriguing, was a young woman talking about her ideas of marriage.
Yes.
And how any husband she has would need to accept the fact that she is thinking of being a suicide bomber.
Right.
And it was, I guess, one of the things that strikes me is, you know, there are the photographs of the war and the devastation that the war brings. But there are also photographs of Iraqis living their lives. And you do have photographs of wedding parties and, you know, men playing dominoes and, you know, sort of this sort of daily life persevering, which I think is very telling, and very, again, you have context for the rest of the happenings. And so I was wondering if you could comment on that woman, on your experience of living with the Iraqis, and what daily life is like.
Sure. Yeah, I think in all conflict situations, and those of us who cover conflicts regularly in different places, we experience the society in a broader way than maybe what comes across in news pictures. You know, violence and destruction make news, but mm-hmm. the sort of subtler impacts of those things on people's lives and their thoughts and their hopes for the future is something that's much more ephemeral and difficult to document. In the case of that young woman who said she wanted to be a suicide bomber, and I don't know how true those words are. I don't know if that's just a sentiment. I'm not even sure she knows what that means. I mean, she's only 20 years old and, and you know, never lived away from home and never lived outside of Baghdad.
Right.
But she did have a lot of exposure in her short life to, you know, to the difficulties like poverty. Her father was killed in the Iran-Iraq War. She was supported by her mother, by her brother, who was a construction worker. You know, her mother was a widow, and they lived in a sort of one-room house, and they lived largely off the benefit, the sort of support of friends and neighbors, some of whom were in this in the Mehdi Army militia. So they became sort of heroic in her eyes, and heroic in that they were fighting the occupation, which she saw bringing a lot of violence to her community. So she felt that the heroic thing to aspire to then logically would be to fight like they fought, to fight for a just cause. And she felt fighting against the occupation was a just cause. So that's the sort of environment that young Iraqis are growing up in these days. And, you know, just as whatever positive things they see coming out of the war, coming as a result of the fall of the regime, there may be just as many, if not more, negative things that have affected them in their lives since the war started. And that's important to remember, I think, when we reflect on what American foreign policy should be. We have to think not only about what sort of political agendas we have, but the kind of individual and personal impact we're having on other individual human beings. These are the people who shape the world, and particularly, you know, children who grow up in war zones grow up in with a lot of violent thoughts in their minds, because that's what they see every day, and that's what they're learning. And we've sort of set the agenda, we set the tone for this.
Absolutely. There's another stunning photograph, this one by Thorne, I believe, of a young boy watching his relatives repairing a rocket-propelled grenade launcher. And, you know, the young boy, I'm thinking, looks to be like maybe six.
Yeah, I'd say five.
And, again, the thing that struck me was, here we are, when I say we, I mean the U.S. We, that's us, you know, creating this foreign policy that is teaching what to the next generation of the world? You know, is this likely to bring peace, or is this likely to bring new generations of people who are so struck and so impacted by the violence of the war that they learn the ways of fighting and take that up as their path?
Yeah, I think, you know, of course there's a lot of discussion about every war, you know, should we go to war in any situation? There's going to be debate and discussion about whether or not it's the right thing to do. But it's important to remember some really basic fundamental facts that we seem to be increasingly willing to overlook. For example, you know, the terms surgical strike and precision bombing. These are terms that allow us to ignore the fact that a bombing is an act of incredible violence. And war is an act of violence, and we know from our kindergarten that violence begets more violence. The more violence you add to a situation, the more likely you're going to have violence in the next round. And this is sort of a roundabout way to get back to that photograph where we see the next generation, and who knows what the politics are going to be like in 15 years when he's fully able to fight. But he's growing up in an environment where he sees violence as an acceptable way of dealing with conflict.
And I wanted to also maybe just talk for a moment about the nature of being embedded versus the nature of not being in. To me, that has everything to do with what you're talking about, with actually noticing what's going on in the lives of Iraqis. And, Thorne, you have a wonderful paragraph in the book about being embedded with the Iraqi people themselves. And I was wondering if you could comment on what is missed in the process of embedding journalists.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we produce this book, we put together Unembedded as a way of balancing what we see in the media as an over-reliance on, first off, official sources of information, primarily the White House and the Pentagon, but secondly, also an over-reliance in the media, particularly in television, on reporters who are embedded with the U.S. forces, those who are traveling with them. We don't mean to say that that program should be discontinued. It's a useful and beneficial program, and good reporting can come from embedded journalists, and I hope that program continues. But it's equally, if not more important, to continue to see what the lives of the 26 million Iraqis are like. I have worked embedded for a brief period of time in Iraq, for a somewhat longer period of time in Afghanistan. And it's fascinating to work that way and to see what the American soldiers' lives are like, and that's a great way to do a story about the American soldiers. But you don't when you're embedded, you don't have a sense of where you are, because the Americans bring so much of their culture with you, with them. During the day, they're closed up inside armored vehicles. They're carrying heavy guns. You can imagine what that must be like to a civilian when a convoy of heavily armed men speaking a strange language pulls up in front of their house. They're not going to be able to have a very real relationship with those people. And so the Americans don't really understand very well the culture of the place where they are. And then when they return to their base, then, you know, they have their portable DVD player so that you can be manning a 50 caliber gun on a Bradley fighting vehicle during the day and watching The Matrix in your bunk at night, which further insulates the American soldiers and those reporters who are with them from the culture of the place where they are. So, of course, it's very, very important to be able to travel without body armor so that you fit in, without soldiers behind you carrying a gun so that people are less intimidated by you, and then you see a very different picture of Iraq than you would see if you were traveling with the American soldiers.
Absolutely. We want to take a moment right now and invite Daniel,
I believe Daniel, too.
And I believe in Daniel, too.
I believe in
Daniel. I'm willing to listen.
Excellent. And you see, even our guest believes in you, Daniel.
And also, Zafiro is here. Hi, Zafiro.
See. Hello. Good to hear y'all.
Zafiro's first time in the radio station, and we're here to take your pledge for KBOO. Let's give him the number right off the top, 503-232-8818. People are calling, I'm happy to tell you. I'm just listening to this broadcast and thinking about what a stark difference we have in our media. We have, you know, people that have the administration telling you what's going on in Iraq, and they have Clear Channel and most of the corporate media to sort of back up that word, and it's a stark contrast from what we're hearing from soldiers, what we're hearing from journalists that come back, and what we're hearing from actual people. It's quite an imbalance, and if you call right now, you can help us balance that out, balance the truth. There are warriors here in community radio, actually community radio all across the country. I call them warriors because most of them aren't getting paid. We have about something like 500 volunteers here now. Volunteers run KBOO. You could help from where you are, actually. You don't have to come down here and actually do the programming like these volunteers who give their time. You can help us with your money, because we don't exist without listener support. We don't have huge grants to do that for us. You just pick up the phone and you call, what is that number, Zafiro?
It is 503-232-8818. And you're outside of Portland. You can call 1-877-500-KBOO.
And you are from a different culture.
I'm from the Greek culture. We are having our Independence Day celebration tomorrow.
Greek Independence Day. Yeah, that's right. You guys invented democracy. You've come to the right
place. A form
place.
Of it. It's a funny form of it, though. We had democracy, but it was only for the people who owned land and not at all for the slaves or the women. So it was a kind of convenient democracy for a few Athenians who did well by it.
It's sort of like this country, I think.
I can see the similarities there.
Well, Zafiro came down here to KBOO. We're at 20 Southeast 8th. I'd like to encourage you to do that. K&F Coffee House at 26 and Clinton has given us coffee. It's very nice coffee. We like it. And this is a place where if you came in here, you would see how it works, you know, because there are people answering the phones back here. There's people being trained in the air room. She's being trained to engineer. Sounds like a perfect job to me. This is people that took over a radio station. In 1968, this happened, and the experiment is still going on today.
It's widening the community of people that have, once you have a little bit of support in order to walk outside of the standard media, it makes it easier to continue that stride, to learn more investigative methods and report them so that people do have access to news that isn't stamped by a government and acceptable to a particular kind of propaganda. I think building that community builds the access to the information.
I love the sound of your phone calls, by the way, out there.
Yes, indeed. I just wanted to remind people that how they can build that community is to call 503-232-8818. That's 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. That's 500-KBOOT.
You know, some of you might be listening online. You can actually pledge online, too, at kboo.fm. Or wherever you are, if you're listening, if you're at work and maybe you're online with somebody in your online community, tell them about that. They can log on to kboo.fm and listen to community radio and listen to a truth broadcast. There are places all over the country where this kind of radio doesn't happen, but they may have internet connection. So we do have listeners actually all over the world. So that's exciting. If you're in touch with someone on another part of the globe, spread the word. Spread the word of KBOO.FM. And as I said, they can pledge online. Or, as we said, you can come right down here to 20 Southeast 8th. We're half a block off Burnside. And you can get this KBOO ceramic coffee mug free to the first 100 people. Free. You come in the door, you pay your pledge. Takes it away.
Well, and of course, I want to remind everyone that you can get a wonderful copy of this book, Unembedded, if
That's
you
right.
make a $75 pledge. And you don't have to pay that all at once. You can do electronic funds transfer, so it disappears magically and painlessly from your account every month. But this book is really amazing, and I know that you would cherish it and be very glad that you did it. You certainly wouldn't regret making this pledge to get this fabulous book and to be a member of this community. 503-232-8818 is the way to do that.
I want to remind people that Portland had one of the largest peace marches, gatherings against the war.
All of you listening were out there. I saw all of you out there.
Each and every one.
I was there.
And I
was there.
I think it's really, really super important to remember the role KBOO plays when it comes to organizing that kind of response. As we had different sort of sponsoring individuals, different representatives from different groups that were sponsoring it,
well,
I should say.
And reporting about it.
On the air daily, for a good week and a half beforehand, talking about the many different facets of the war and certainly reporting on it as it was going on. We've also had a mini series about the defense economy of Oregon in our evening news program. I mean, just amazing stuff. And why is this community so inspired, so lively, so active? I think KBOO has a lot to do with that. And that's why you need to step up to the plate right now and call 503-232-8818.
You don't have to get a bunch of music.
Yeah, there's that too. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Daniel Zaffiro, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
And we'll be back in a little while.
And we're hoping we still have Thorne and Kale.
Hello?
Good morning.
Hi, we're still here.
Oh, you're there.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for your patience.
It's the joy of community radio as we get to really go to our community for our support. KBOO is kind of unique even amongst community radio broadcast outlets, as we have about 85% of our support comes directly from our listeners, and it allows us to be a little more on the cutting edge, a little more on the independent side than just about any other medium I am aware of. So we thank you for your patience, and we thank our community for their continued support. And, back to the experience of working in Iraq as photojournalists. If you've joined us late, dear listeners, I'm Ani. I'm here with Melody. And we are interviewing this morning Kale Alford and Soren Anderson, who are two of four independent photojournalists who have put together this book, Unembedded. And I wanted to talk specifically again about the book. How was it you had the ideas of coming together, the four of you, and making this book happen? How did that idea generate, and how did you find a publisher that said yes?
Well, we all crossed paths in Iraq. Thorne and I have worked together for many years in collaboration, and we met Rita Leisner, the Canadian photographer in the book, and Khaith Abdul Ahad, the Iraqi photojournalist. We met them in Baghdad because we were working in sort of similar ways, and, you know, without, at that time, without security guards. We were sort of moving around pretty freely and finding stories that we thought were important just sort of on our own as freelancers, and then pitching those to publications or picking up work with publications along the way. And we realized after our third trip, my third trip anyway, to Iraq, that the work that we had accumulated was getting published. It was getting published in the mainstream media, but sort of one picture here and a photograph there mm-hmm. to accompany someone else's story. And we felt that together we had a body of work that was really telling, and we could create from that our own or a narrative that more closely reflected what we saw on the ground. And if we pulled our resources and put our energies together, we could come up with a sort of a different window on the conflict. And so we began to put together this work and considered making a traveling exhibition. That was actually the first idea, was to sort of get it out there directly to audiences without the middleman, so to speak, but just sort of communicate directly what we saw in mm-hmm. that way. And Thorne had previously published a small pamphlet about the sanctions with Chelsea Green Publishing, and that began the relationship with Chelsea Green. And when they heard about our exhibit project, that sort of the book idea came from there. So Chelsea Green got behind it pretty strongly and published what's a very risky thing in the publishing world, a photo book. They tend right. not to be the most lucrative way to get a return, but this book has, I think, done surprisingly well because of exactly what we've been talking about this morning, the sort of lack of, perspective, let's say a lack of broader perspective on this particular conflict.
Well, I just think that there's so few places that the average American can go to see what's really happening in Iraq in a pictorial way. You know, you can look on the internet and check out the foreign newspapers, but there's just not really any mainstream news source in America that is providing images of what's really happening there.
Yeah, and it's definitely worth mentioning at this point, Iraq is a terribly dangerous place to work for a journalist, and there are not very many foreigners spending a lot of time on the ground because it's not safe for them. It's not safe for the people they interview. Simply talking to a foreign journalist can get you killed in Iraq at this point. Mm. And so it's an incredibly dangerous place to work. There have been more journalists killed in Iraq now than there were killed in the decade of the Vietnam War. And most of those journalists are Iraqi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Reporters Without Borders has sort of been joining us with our exhibit in Iraq, in New York, rather, on the third anniversary of the war. And they're trying to get their message out that not only are journalists in Iraq being killed by insurgents or random violence or targeted by sort of militant factions, but they're also being killed by U.S. soldiers and they're being detained by U.S. soldiers. And most of our news at this point is coming from Iraqi journalists and Arab journalists, not from foreigners.
Could I add to that?
Yeah,
one thing that's important to remember then, as I said, we've been traveling around doing presentations, and we have this exhibit, and we do radio call-in shows and that kind of thing. And one of the questions that we get fairly consistently is we have people saying, are things really as bad in Iraq as the media makes them appear? And I'm always quite shocked by that because in our experience, it's very, very, very difficult and dangerous for journalists to cover the worst of what's going on in Iraq now. The offensive on Tal Afar, for example, was virtually a black hole of news coverage. So, in effect, we can't actually get close to the worst of what's happening in Iraq, and we're severely limited in our ability to just wander around the country and find out anything that's going on outside of Baghdad or major city centers.
Mm-hmm.
So my response is often, as bad as things may appear to you in the media, they're probably much worse than what you perceive.
That would be my estimation, is that, we only see the part that's considered acceptable for, a public consumption, which is usually not even the tip of the iceberg.
And it's just even if we grant that anything is publishable, it's impossible for journalists to get to the places where the coalition is conducting bombings in most cases, like much along the Syrian border, for example. Bombings have been continuing and increasing over the last year. This year, a lot of people don't realize that they don't understand, but this year there are roughly twice as many bombing raids per month as there were at this time last year. So the Americans have not been phasing down these aerial bombardments. They've been accelerating them over the past year, and largely along the Syrian border, and that's an area that's impossible for most journalists and certainly for Western journalists to get to safely. So we just have no idea what that looks like.
And that kind of brings me to the next thing I'd love to talk about, which is some of the reports. I mean, right now we're actually looking at a story coming out in Time magazine this week about what appears to be sort of the deliberate killing and revenge killing of at least 15 people in a city called Haditha. And that happened in November. There was an explosion by the side of the road that killed a Marine, and then it was shortly followed, reportedly, by Marines storming many of the houses or all of the houses and killing many of the civilians. That is coming out this week, and it brought to mind a series of photographs in the book that were taken by Gaith Abdul-Ahad,
right.
Where, you know, he is witness to and caught in the middle of a couple of fighter helicopters, U.S. fighter helicopters, machine gunning civilians on the street that he was in. I was wondering if you could talk about your experience of witnessing, the killing of civilians.
Well, those sorts of incidents are just, uncountably common in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's what happens, and it's, in many ways, this is war, and this is, it's on one hand, it is actually understandable that you put some soldiers on the ground in a very vulnerable position, and, roads, for everything from roadside bombs, booby traps, ambushes. I mean, these guys are terrified and targets. And so when something, and they don't know who is fighting, it's a guerrilla war, it's very difficult for them to understand what's going on around them and who's responsible after one of these incidents. And it's very standard military practice that when a convoy comes under attack, they call in for some kind of assistance or backup, and their first priority is to get the soldiers out of there safely.
Mm-hmm.
And that might involve, for example, like that Haifa Street situation, the pictures you mentioned by Haith Abdul-Ahad. In that situation in Baghdad, there was a convoy that came under attack, and they called in close air support. Some fighter helicopters
mm-hmm.
came to help get the soldiers out of there. And no soldiers were actually injured or killed in that situation. They all got out safely, but the helicopters flew sort of around the, patrolled the streets and shot at anyone moving on the ground, including a group of civilians who were sort of celebrating around the burning vehicle. The insurgents who actually performed that attack were, I'm sure, long gone by that point. But the civilians on the street who didn't know any better or who were just foolishly exposed at that time and celebrating because they actually supported the fight against the occupation,
mm-hmm.
they were, they supported sort of emotionally, not physically.
Mm-hmm.
They were targeted and killed, and 22 civilians died that day. And that's, those kinds of incidents happen again and again, and we've all been witness to different moments like that.
Right.
When a convoy comes under attack, the gunners shoot wildly along the sides of the roads and kill people having lunch in their houses, and that creates an enormous amount of anger and resentment against the occupation forces, against U.S. forces, and it continues, it fuels the
cycle of resistance.
It becomes
a spiral. I can imagine.
Violence. Yeah.
I can imagine. I mean, there's no way to win, for the average Iraqi who is just trying to stay alive no matter what you do. There's no easy answer. It seems like life is just a constant
series of crises, you know, where at any moment you could be, your house could be exploding around you just without warning. I just don't see how people can live like that.
Yeah, and I've met people who've told me, you know, I wasn't going to fight this. I wasn't going to fight the occupation. It wasn't in my interest to fight the Americans. But since my child's been killed, or since mm-hmm. my son's been killed, now it's my duty to you know, take revenge or become mm-hmm. more involved. And I can't prevent myself from getting involved any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that we've all heard that story before.
I'm wondering if you have ideas of. There's such a widely ranging sort of ideas of how many Iraqi deaths there have been. It's been hard enough to actually get accurate figures on American GI deaths, as the Pentagon is not particularly forthcoming with any information, any information, period.
They'd like to tell us nothing.
But Iraq body count, there's the website that is listing just over 37,000 Iraqi dead now.
Yeah, we need to put that number in context, of course. And, I'm happy that Iraq body count does the work that it does. I wish they were a little bit more explicit about their
mm-hmm.
methodology.
Mm-hmm.
Because, in fact, the way they document that number is they report deaths that are reported in at least two reputable media organizations. So it's a very high standard because, as I said, much of Iraq is a no-go zone for journalists. So there are a lot of deaths that simply go unreported.
Sure.
And additionally, they have the requirement that it's reported by two reputable media sources, and they have to match up in terms of names, which, of course, is very difficult when you're reporting, often translating from Arabic to English.
Sure.
Names, ages, details. So a lot of actual deaths that are reported are disqualified because of minor discrepancies. And I wish that Iraq body count was more explicit about that on their website. What people need to know when they see that page is that this is an extremely conservative estimate.
Yes.
We can be guaranteed that this is far below the minimum number of people who have actually died in this conflict. And I'm very sorry that Iraq body count doesn't make that more explicit. There's been another study that's conducted by the Lancet Medical Journal,
right,
which I'm sure that you've heard of. And it's a study that was immediately attacked from many sources, and I would encourage listeners to investigate for themselves. There's a lot of literature out there about the Lancet Journal, but it's important to remember that this is essentially the methodology that the Lancet used. It's essentially the same methodology that's been used to estimate deaths from past conflicts, such as Rwanda, Srebrenica. These numbers that we have, that we've taken to be the gold standard numbers for reporting deaths in those conflicts, the same methodology was used by the Lancet Medical Journal. It's essentially a sampling methodology. A cluster sampling. They visit areas of the country and they visit every single household and they look for death certificates, and they also have a high standard of reporting. And based on what they find in these areas, they extrapolate to the population as a whole. They were also not able to go to some of the worst places for security reasons, so you can imagine that also would tend to push their numbers downward. They also excluded entirely the area of Fallujah because the numbers were so off the charts there that it, according to their statistical model, it had to be discarded. So they came up with estimates of the number of civilians killed or the number of Iraqis killed being as many or perhaps even more than 100,000.
Yes, that's a number I've heard of frequently.
Yeah, it's a complicated, you know, statistical process, but I would encourage listeners to investigate it on their own. But even if we take that as a top number and the Iraq body count is a body number between 37 and 100,000, I mean, it's horrifying across the entire range.
Absolutely. I'd like to ask you both, since you have traveled so extensively in Iraq, what is your opinion if you were, the general in charge of this operation or in charge of the Pentagon? Would you withdraw the troops now, or do you think that that would be counterproductive? Do you think that they need to stay for a while to minimize the, you know, civil unrest that would take place if we were to pull the troops out immediately?
No, this is a very, you know, of course, a very complicated policy discussion. I mean, our aim is to make make it possible for that policy discussion to be made in an atmosphere of greater honesty of what's actually happening on the ground. And, you know, as photojournalists, I mean, that's really the best that we can do. That said, I think for those listeners who are trying to figure this out for themselves, I think some hard questions need to be asked. It's often said that the Americans are there to prevent a civil war. Of course, there already is
a civil war
going on in Iraq, and we've seen that on during the Samarra after the bombing of the shrine in Samarra, we've seen that the Americans actually didn't act to protect against reprisal killings. They did support the Iraqi government on the one day of curfew, but apart from that, the Americans more or less retreated to their bases and protected their own. So it's questionable that the Americans actually are serving the function that that we often hear them claim to be serving, and it is an open matter of debate whether the American presence there just continues to reinforce the sectarian divides that are bringing Iraq further and further down the spiral of civil war.
So you think that if we were to withdraw immediately, that it wouldn't make things any worse than that?
Well, if you're asking for my personal opinion, I would say that, you know, this is a house of cards, and the bottom members have largely been removed already. I mean, the damage has been done.
Yeah, it has.
Essentially, from the entire year of 2003 had set Iraq up for some form of catastrophe. I think it's entirely plausible that if the Americans were to withdraw tomorrow, that there could be an escalation of violence. It would put the resolution of that violence in the hands of the Iraqis themselves, and the tribal entities, which span ethnicities, I believe, would assume ever-increasing importance. And we know from Iraqi history that the tribal alliances have always been the strongest stabilizing force.
And in fact, under Saddam, that was sort of an anomaly that they were, I don't know if they were at peace, but they were, some of those conflicts were held in abeyance by Saddam's rule, I guess, is a way to put it.
Well, yeah, I think that regime used the tribal alliances to their benefit,
mm-hmm.
and anyone who would to rule, any Iraqi who were probably to rule in Iraq as they please would do that. Any dictator would do that. It was just sort of the logical way to handle things and the traditional way to enforce power, and Saddam knew that very well. I mean, the Sunni Triangle area, what we call the Sunni Triangle area, all Anbar province in Iraq, is a very traditional tribal region, and that's where we have the majority of these resistance fighters in the beginning came out of that region. They're also fiercely independent. And I was actually in that region after the invasion in April 2003 and again in October 2003, and spent some time near Ramadi in a village and watched firsthand how those structures worked. And it was really up to each individual town at that point. They were not under the thumb of the regime when the Americans arrived. It was up to each individual town, each individual group and leadership, tribal leadership, to decide what they were going to do and how they would respond to the U.S. invasion. And the sheikh, who I was most familiar with in that region, said, you know, had decided among himself and his community that they weren't going to fight the Americans, that they were going to sit back and see what happened. And within a year, they changed their minds. They decided they were going to fight the Americans because of what was happening in their neighborhood and because they were unhappy with the way the occupation was going.
Right, I can imagine. Do you two plan to return to Iraq?
I'm sure I'll return to Iraq. I don't know when. I don't want to go there. You know, I feel drawn to go there and I feel a responsibility to be there, but as a photojournalist, it's incredibly difficult to work. I don't want to go there and be stuck in a hotel. I'll go when I find some way to work again.
Yes. Right. I can understand that.
Do you have, we only have about a minute or two left, and I was hoping if you had any final thoughts that you wanted to share with our listeners this morning, you could do that.
Well, we do have a website, unembedded.net, and we'll be posting on there an exhibit schedule. And, you know, the reason we are back here, I'm back in the States now spending full time, spending energy getting the photographs we've already made out there to the public, because it's so difficult to work in Iraq now. But what we've seen and the sample of what you'll see in our book is pretty representative of what's going on on the ground now. So if you want to visit our website or get involved in this project in some way to widen the public dialogue, that's what we're doing right at the moment.
Kale Alford, thank you so very much for joining us this morning, and thank you, Soren Anderson, for being available and for the work that you do.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us on the show.
And good luck with your exhibit.
And broadening the public debate is really what we're about here at KABU, your very own community radio station. It is, in fact, the goal of talk radio at KABU in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, I feel a little strange, because this is one of those situations where, in fact, we were not able to take any listeners' calls this morning. And I'll tell you why that is. It's the limits of technology.
That's right.
Because both Kale and Thorne wanted to be able to contribute together. That tied up both, count them both, of our
telephone patches.
And we were unable to actually have any interaction with them, with the listeners.
So it's not like we don't love you, listeners, but we just didn't have enough phone patches.
That technological capacity was stretched to the gills.
Yes.
But Melody, you have something for the public interest.
And now for something equally depressing, but equally important that you need to know about. There's going to be a very important fundraiser tonight. Tonight at 7:30 at the Pacific Crest Community School. It's at 116 Northeast 29th. And it's about genocide in Uganda. It's a fundraiser to benefit so-called invisible children. And I just need to read you this paragraph so you'll understand what it's about. For the past 20 years, children have been the tragic victims of a horrific terror campaign in northern Uganda. A rebel group called the Lord's Resistance Army has been fighting a civil war against the Ugandan government. And the LRA employs the use of child soldiers, which effectively means they kidnap Ugandan children as young as five. These kids are beaten and mutilated, exposed to horrific violence, and forced to commit atrocities, often against their own family.
Yep.
The girls are raped and used as sex slaves. Thousands of children walk miles from their homes to city centers every night in hopes of avoiding abduction. This conflict has displaced nearly 2 million people, more than 80% of the area's population. And while the conflict rages on, it's been called one of the most neglected and ignored crises in the world. And Invisible Children is a nonprofit dedicated to providing education, relief, and safety to the child soldier victims of this war. And that's what this this benefit is all about. There will be a performance by the Kagoso African Dance Theater and a silent auction of local artists' work inspired by this crisis. And a film will be shown called Invisible Children on the genocide in Uganda. And that's tonight, 7:30 at Pacific Crest Community School, 116 Northeast 29th.
Excellent. And we'll have that information at the front desk after the program. So if you didn't get exactly that address or that time, and it is tonight, 7:30, Pacific Crest Community School. You can call the front desk after the program if you would like. So, we have with us special guests. We have Teresa.
And our engineer is doing that engineer dance again. I swear, she must be taking modern interpretive dance for engineers.
And I like the fact that she has two other engineers in training.
They are a dance.
Learning the wonders of the engineer dance, the engineer reach,
like
the engineer stretch.
You know?
There's all kinds of physical activities associated with board hopping that you just wouldn't even guess, dear listener. And good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. I'm here with Zafiro.
What happened
and,
to Daniel?
And Daniel had to go.
Okay.
And we still have...
But, squeaky.
Yeah, we'll need a little levity because the reason I want you to call right now is not it's not a very happy reason, but it's one of these. This is one of these times where you have to grab some strength in yourself and join the movement. Frankly, that's what's going on right now, and this radio station is I like to think a big part of it, especially in this region. This book, Unembedded, is an essential work of counterpropaganda. It's something that stands against the narcissistic and self-serving lies of corporate media, but let me give you just one tiny example, already talked about perhaps, but the photograph that affects me the most shows a tiled background and a little girl. She's 8 years old, and she's laying down. She's being watched by an older woman dressed in black, and she looks very much like my daughter at that age, very much. I mean, she's her face is relaxed. She's got short brown hair, brown arching eyebrows, and it just looks so appealing to me. She's got brown eyes. They're open, and she has strong-looking legs, and I remember how my daughter could run at that age. She is dead. She is being washed for burial. And when you see this picture, you will not think of the war in the same way, and nor will anyone. And if you ever have anyone over at your place or with you when you have this book and they start talking about how the war is necessary, you show them that picture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That will be the end of that. And you need to get a copy of this book because that is part of counter-propaganda. That is part of fighting the media lies, and that's what we do here at KBOO partly. So the number to call is 503-232-8818. The time to call is now because there's this insidious voice, and I think it's worse in this culture than in some other ones. And the insidious voice in your head will say, well, maybe I'll do that later. No, you won't.
Won't
do it later. There isn't a later. There is only now. You have the capacity to do this. Find some courage in yourself and say, I've got $10 this month. I'll have $10 next month. I'll have $10 the month after that. You will. Heck, if you've got a radio and a phone.
call 503-232-8818 and let us know that you want to support this kind of radio. Let us know you want a copy of Unembedded. We do have a couple copies left, I would hope. I believe that's a $75 minimum pledge. I'd suggest you may just go ahead and give us $10 a month. Give us 1 hour of your wage every month.
It's easier than you think. You just call us. We send you this thing in the mail, and
mm-hmm.
we set it up.
It's wonderful.
It's no time. It's $10. It's you doing something. And, Safira, what did you think? You were just now looking at the book. What did you think when you were looking at the pictures?
Well, there were a couple of things that came to mind. First off, these war images are part of the images that I've lived with through a couple of wars, maybe with exception to the first Iraq entanglement we had with the Bush administration. But outside of that, with every other war, you have these kinds of images. What I'm wondering about is one of the authors of this book, Abdul Ahad, I can't pronounce his or her first name. What I wondered about is it was good to see somebody without an American name
mm-hmm.
and how they influenced the vision of this book and how were they someone that had been raised there.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder what their contribution was.
There were four journalists working on that book, Gaith Abdul-Ahad and then the Canadian woman, Rita Leisner, and then two Americans who we just interviewed, Soren Anderson and Kale Alford, and to see the different perspectives they bring. Each of the photographs are credited with, you know, which journalist took
mm-hmm.
what, and they each have some text in the book as well. So you can see, you know, the perspectives between the Canadian, the Iraqi, and the American journalists, and the perspective that they shared, all being in the war zone,
mm-hmm.
all being in the conflict zone together. Again, call 503-232-8818. We have a $1,500 goal to attain this morning, and when last I looked, we still needed to raise over $1,000. We need to hear from you, my friend.
Yes, we do.
Get up, stand up.
It's so important that you safeguard your access to information that goes places where the mainstream media
mm-hmm.
will not. It's so important to safeguard your access to this community hub that helps communities organize and come together during these times.
Okay.
Call 503-232-8818. And please take this action right now, this morning, before you do anything else. Go ahead, do something you can feel really good about. Dial 503-232-8818.
I tell you, once you have this book, your life's going to be a little different.
Yes, indeed. And if you have despaired of persuading your family or your friends or your coworkers or your neighbor or whoever to listen to reason about supporting the Iraq War, I can't think of a better tool to further that quest than this book. I really think that, you know, if these people were able to see these photos, that they might feel very differently.
It's hard to express the effect of that one photograph. I mean, one thing I want to add to it is she looks so alive, and
mm-hmm.
that's what
yes,
brings it
does.
Across to you that her life has just been robbed from her.
It is really astonishing because, in fact, you have
the experience of the intellectual sort of understanding. If you've been listening to KABU, if you've been reading alternative press or foreign press, you have the intellectual understanding. But unless you've been in a conflict zone, unless you've been amongst war, then really you don't have the visceral understanding. And this book really kind of helps to open one's eyes to that. 503-232-8818. Sounds like there's another phone ringing in the background. Maybe one of the engineers can answer it.
Yes, so may have to run and answer that phone. If you're ringing through, please be patient. I'd like to thank Renee from Portland for renewing her pledge. Philip from Portland, a member, came down to contribute extra. That's very nice. We love that. We love the party atmosphere. We love the potluck atmosphere. And, you know, and I especially like all the yummy foods that appear from... But I'd like to thank also George from Portland. Pirko from Portland, renewed, came down in person. It's wonderful. Crystal from Vancouver, renewed.
Thank you.
By the way, if you come down in person, we give you a mug. It's a special deal. It's on top of everything else.
We won't mug you. We'll give you a mug.
Yeah. This book, Unembedded, is, I guess you'd say, a coffee table format. It's the colors are very vivid. I won't use the term beautiful, except that truth is beautiful.
They're stark. They're stunning. Yes. And they are just incredibly well done, very moving. I've had several friends sort of spontaneously break into tears upon reading it.
Oh, you can't read this
and
without
not
crying.
It's true. And I think that that's really important. It's really important for us who tend to live in our heads. It's really important for us who tend to live in a kind of disconnected way to actually be brought that kind of impactful connection so that
well,
we
that's the thing,
can
isn't
be
it?
Inspired
I mean,
to continue to take the action we take to end these atrocities.
Yeah, Anya, it's just the thing that strikes me is that we're so encouraged to be passive.
Yeah.
It's like we're so encouraged to think that this doesn't really involve us. When you see these pictures, you know that they do. These are real people. These are part of your life.
That's be involved right now with your very own community radio station, part of the solution, 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. Again, if you have $5 in your pocket right now, take a risk. Take a chance. Believe that you will have $5 in your pocket next month,
right,
and the month after that, and the month after that, and that $5 would do KABU and your community a whole lot better when contributed here, to be working in concert with so many other people's contributions to continue your community radio station.
You know,
your access to this information, this analysis, your community dialogue, your feedback, this is the place you need to put some resources now. 503-232-8818. Yeah, Teresa?
I just wanted to comment that community, it's easy to think of community as the immediate broadcast area, 90.7. You know, it kind of crackles in Beaverton. But we have this 877 number for a reason. We have repeater transmitters, and we have KABU.FM, and we are reaching people all over the world. And so we have this toll-free number because you're part of the community. And it does cost us money to get to you. And we do want to welcome you in the community, and we want your participation, even if you're just listening to us in Timbuktu at KABU.FM. And so please call us at 1-877-500-KABU, or if you can't get through on that, we would really appreciate a pledge of any amount on KABU.FM. 1-877, that's our toll-free number, 500-KABU, 552-66. And I'm so pleased by the response we're getting here. You know, and now I'll contradict myself by saying Portland is amazing. We had so many thousands of people come out to protest this war. One of the biggest, was it the biggest or one of the biggest in the continental United States?
It was one of the biggest. I think it was possibly the third largest in the world, which, you know, we were talking earlier this week here at the station about, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? You know, because we look at the major municipal centers. I believe what I heard was that I think London and Chicago were both larger. But, again...
they're much larger cities.
Yeah. So, proportionately, you know, go Portland, way to walk your talk. That was very, very good.
And due largely to the efforts of the Peace and Justice Works that helped organize that march.
An amazing piece of community organizing was had.
And we have an unlimited supply of these books, so don't be discouraged if you've been trying to get through. And
only $7 a month of a EFT will get you this book, because it's a $75 minimum pledge. All you have to do is call 503-232-8818.
Okay, a line just opened up, 503-232-8818.
Keep those phones ringing.
Excellent, excellent. I have this book in front of me, and it's kind of hard to keep my voice from shaking, so I'm going to stop looking at it for a minute.
There you go.
It's, you know, it's kind of a, I won't call it a negative experience, but it's an intense experience, and it's one that you need to have.
Yes, it is.
So, for once, I'm going to ask you to keep calling and keep calling and keep calling. Normally I say, oh, we've reached our goal. Oh, look how many people are calling. We're happy and all this sort
keep
of thing.
Calling.
But actually, this is one of these times where my activist heart starts beating a little harder and stronger. And I'm so happy that these journalists were so brave to go out there. So many journalists have died trying to get this information out, trying to break the lies of the Bushites. And this is an amazing artifact of,
yeah,
of that effort, and you need to have it, and you need to show it to people, and that's,
yeah,
part of the effort.
I would love to see that exhibit come to Portland. That would be fabulous. But barring that, we have the book.
Well, perhaps we can look into bringing that exhibit to Portland. But, you know, to me, what one of the things that comes across so plainly is the courage of the photojournalists,
yes,
and the courage of the Iraqi people.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just an outpouring of human connection that I think is really at the heart of what these photojournalists do. You know, they are there to contextualize the conflict. They are there to contextualize war. They are there to really try to give you as close a witness experience as you can get from your armchair here in the States. So we really want to have you share in that experience. And what's more, we want you to share the experience with others. So if you've been talking to your coworkers and talking to your family about why it is that we don't think the continuing occupation is a good idea, why we think, in fact, the troops should be best supported by being home, and you kind of find people glazing over and maybe still not getting it, although I've noticed that most people are at least getting something,
mm-hmm,
like, something like going right over there.
If we could show these pictures on national TV, everybody would get it real quickly.
Images really bring it home in a way I just can't tell you. So, because they're images, that's what they need to do. They need to be images. I can't tell you much.
KBOO so, Portland.
I wanted to once again exhort you to go ahead, give us a call, get a copy of this book,
532-8818.
And make sure your support for community radio continues strong. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Here they come with the hook. We better get off.
And, well, I'm getting sort of confusing hand signals myself. Nope. Okay, that's it. Okay.
She's coming with a hook, I'm telling you.
503, I'm going to do those numbers one more time. 503-232-8818.
You can still get it. Keep going.
Or 1-877-500-5266. Of course, we love it when you come down in person and meet us. And we are at 20 Southeast 8th. So come on down, people. Come on down. See the radio station. See where your energy, your money goes. And meet the folks that make radio happen and bring it to you daily here at KBOO. See ya.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up on this morning's radio zine at 9 o'clock, it's a special presentation of a recent Portland lecture by David K. Johnston, author of Perfectly Legal, The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich. Johnston makes the case for a progressive tax system as a prerequisite for democracy. At 10:30, it's Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, the head of Greenpeace discusses how the group was audited by the IRS at the request of an ExxonMobil-funded group.